Martin Keaveney, Creative Writing. Creative Writing, Introduction by Ramone, Week 5.
Good evening, and you're all very welcome to Week 5 of your Creative Writing Introduction by Remote course. So this is an audio recording of the tutorial section of the course prepared for those of you who cannot attend the live video conference. You will already have received an email containing the PowerPoint presentation package, which contains all of the slides I will be discussing over the next hour or so. So what I would like you to do now is check your email if you have not already done so, and download the file named Week 5, which I've sent you. You can pause the audio while you do this if you like. Okay, so you should now be looking at the first slide in the presentation. You'll see the date and the title, Human World, this week. And that is a photo taken of some, well, very contented and happy looking humans, which of course is often the last thing you will find in any piece of literature which involves human beings. Just to remind you, if you have any questions about any aspect of the course so far, don't hesitate to email me at info@martinkeaveney.com. That's K-E-A-V-E-N-E-Y. Okay, let's click now to slide 2. So tonight we are talking about, as I said, literature, the literature of writing relationships, which of course is a very broad sweeping title, including maybe the genres of romance, chick lit, if you like to use that term, and drama is some of the examples of that particular of the subgenres of a writing relationships or human relationship genre writing. And we'll primarily be talking about the aspect of the craft, which also involves actually dealing with other humans, the sharing of your work, and also the providing of a critique for their work, as I'll discuss in a few moments. Okay, so clicking on now to slide 3. We are talking here now about the stage of your practice after you have, naturally enough, started your first draft, completed a draft, and as we talked about last week, revising the draft repeatedly a number of times, and getting to a stage where you are ready to show that draft to another writer, or at least another reader, to get some kind of response to the work before you finalize it for submission and publication. Getting somebody to read your masterpiece is not always as easy as you might think, and you may have to sometimes offer something in return. Certainly there are many critique services out there that you can just simply pay for. If you are trying to make your living from writing, this might not be very cost effective. So in this case, writers often use a bartering system where you read someone's work, provide your response to it, and they will do the same for you. I'll talk more about how that process works in a few moments. Now, if we move on there to slide 4, I just want to give you some definitions of the words critique, criticism, review, as these have been put to me in previous classes, and decided to just include a few definitions. So let's look at them here. Critique. So this, I would suggest, is a reasonably good description of what you can provide your fellow writer, or that they can provide to you. And it's defined as a critique of a written work of someone's words, or examination and judgment of a situation, or of somebody's written work and or ideas. That's from the Collins English Dictionary. So that'd be a critique. That's what a critique means. You're not to be confused with the verb to criticize. And to criticize is defined here as, if you criticize someone or something, you express your disapproval of them by saying what you think is wrong with them. So that's not what we're looking for, you disapproving of them. A further word that's used is often maybe is thrown about the place in terms of responses, reviews, or feedback on work is review. And the definition of a review here is a review is a report in the media in which someone gives their opinion of something such as a new book or film. So these are the conventional recognized definitions of these words. And review is possibly not ideal either. What I would rather use is the word response. And a response is where you write a critique and review the work. It is not designed to express disapproval of the work. It is more to try and identify, basically to identify what is not effective in the work. Okay, so what does that mean? I'll give you some I'll give you an example of that. The example of the editor of the long-running Irish magazine, which you may have heard of, the name of it is The Stinging Fly. It says it aims to publish new writers and new writing. And at a workshop I was at a number of years ago, the editor and publisher of that magazine, Declan Mead, said that he would publish works submitted to the magazine, which he did not necessarily like, but that works which effectively handled the material within. Okay, so what does that mean? Now, to just go back to my example of the man getting up one day and going to rob the bank, robbing the bank and getting away. Well, could I have handled that material more effectively? If I send you a story with that exact sequence of events, which is the plot in this course, could I have been more effective? Could I have exploited more out of that story? Could I have been more sensitive to the dynamic of the story? Should I have started at a different point? Should I have started in the bank? Should I have started after he left the bank? Should I have started much earlier? Weeks or months or years before he went and decided to rob the bank. What brought him to the point of robbing the bank? So when you're assessing your own work, it's certainly good to ask yourself the same questions. And if you're responding to somebody else's work, it's good to ask these questions of their work. Not of them, but of their work when you're reading it. So that's kind of a definition of the handling of the material, the handling of the idea behind the work. I'll talk more about that later. We try to avoid, I would suggest that to you that we avoid saying something is good or something is bad. Instead, we assess the work as either being effective or ineffective, useful or in need of further development. You might say this is a trickery of words, but it's actually much more helpful to a writer than just simply saying it's terrible or it is wonderful. It's more precise language, which is what they want. And saying something is wonderful is very pleasant to hear, but it's not really very helpful to the writer. And that's what they're looking for when they submit something to you to read. And that's what you're looking for when you submit your work to them to read. You're looking for useful responses. You're looking for effective kind of assessment of your work. You're not really looking for somebody to just give you a reassurance that you're a good writer and you should keep writing. You can't look for that reassurance anywhere but within yourself to continue on writing. If you need somebody to keep telling you that you're good at writing, then you won't be able to sustain it. So we need to really have that inner belief that, and I would suggest that anyone that's on this course does have that belief, because they've invested their time and their money into coming to this course for our 8-week course to do it. So I would suggest that everyone listening would have the belief. But so you don't really need a reassurance lesson from any reader. What you need from a reader is effective identification of what is working, what is effective in the story. Now, where do we get a response like that? Well, let's have a look at slide 5. Now, selecting readers is not as easy as you might think. You write something, you think it is just so wonderful that anyone would pay a lot of money to read it. Indeed, you might even shiftily say, it's not ready yet, you can't reveal much about its contents. You might even plan out a majestic unveiling of the artwork of your writing. And you then discover that everyone is actually too busy to read your masterpiece, or they read a few lines and get quite distracted and lose it, or get ill, or go missing, or all of the above. Seriously though, you do need people who will give your work the same attention that you have given it, the attention that you've given the work. So where do we go for this? Yeah, we can start with writing groups. Writing groups are a fantastic resource for new writers. I started in one myself. Writers groups often meet every fortnight or so, or monthly. They usually everyone pays a very small amount for services, tea, coffee, or the room hire. It's quite minimal. Everyone reads out their work at these workshops and gives feedback like we do at our workshop. Sometimes there might be a secretary who will organize the writing prompts, writing exercises. There might be some readings. There might be a local writing news. They might have a writer or a local teacher writer to come and discuss work with them and help them with the writing, or discuss or comment on the writing. It's a great thing to join, and it's really very good for maintaining a kind of a regime, certainly as a beginner. Now, the difficulty is that if you've gone to the trouble here of coming to a course like this, where, as I said, you've invested your registration fee into your writing practice, and you're doing the exercises, and you're getting the readings, and you're doing the readings, and you're probably completing a final project, that when you return to the writing group maybe that you were in before, other members will not take you too long before they have detected that you've some training, and that you can be very, very useful to them, and you can point out a lot of things that they wouldn't have seen. And you can suddenly find yourself in the position of just simply teaching a class when you go to your monthly writing group. And it's not fair to you, and obviously it eats into your writing time. So to combat this, I would suggest you would look at the possibility of cultivating a group of the writing group of the course, the people that are in this course with your that you're all kind of linked together now, and where everyone is kind of generally on the same level, and everyone is all kind of looking for a similar outcome, whether it be to publish a memoir, publish some short stories, or actually embark on a career, a full-time career as a professional writer. And I mean, really, you do have to work almost full-time as a writer to really realistically achieve that goal. Because it is a very, very demanding kind of job, even though it is a very difficult role to get a full-time to get a full-time kind of situation in it. So, but it is that kind of work. So I would suggest anyway you would all cultivate a group possibly from this course. That's one option. Now, where else can you get readers? Yes, there are many writing groups out there. If you go to a website called www.christopherfielden.com and /short story tips and writing advice, and I'll send this link on as well later, but he has a long list there of groups of prose and poetry writers, a long, long list, and I may even put that list up on my blog as well, so that you can easily find them and join them if that's what you think you'd need. And it certainly is very useful. I mean, it can't do any harm, can it? To get some feedback, and it's generally free. So that's it's just really very, very good. And you, I mean, you can. I would like obviously want to swap with the writer would be the fairest way. So what we do is kind of talk about that. What we're talking about tonight is how to be give a useful response as well. Yeah, the waiting for a response is not a very pleasant pastime. The best thing really I can suggest to do in this situation is to try and completely obliterate the project out of your head until you hear back. I would assume that if you're going to send something off, you're not going to work on it while you're waiting. I mean, there's little point giving somebody a story, and I mean, this is a thing that writers have been known to do in the past, and I wouldn't encourage it. Is to give somebody a story and then about a week later contact them and tell them,
"Oh, you know, I have a new draft now, so stop reading what you've written, what you've started reading, and get this one instead." That is just not a very good idea at all. It's quite annoying for the reader because they may have already read it, they may be already considering have written some kind of response, and now you're coming along with the new draft, and it's just really, really agitating for your reader, and you just may not be able to get that reader again. So what I would suggest to do is to get it to the best possible state it's in before you send it off to anyone. Don't do like, and I totally understand that when you're writing something and at the end you're still not happy with it, that's fine, but there is a deadline, and when you submit it to this reader or readers, you have to stand back from it until you hear back. Do not continue on writing on it. Take a break from it and work something else. So that's going to be easy, make it easier to just forget about the fact that you have sent off this work to somebody and you're waiting for feedback. Completely, just put it out of your head, work on something else. How long should you be waiting? Well, really, so some would say a month is a maximum for a novel. For short stories, a week, fortnight at the most. I mean, you could read a short story in a very short space of time, but there is an argument that you can be what they call percolating your ideas and your response and your thinking. I mean, have you ever read something and then read it 2 weeks later and had a different response to it? So that is a factor, but I mean, if you are working in this and this is a kind of a very serious kind of occupation for you and you need to hear back as soon as possible, then waiting for years is not really an option, for somebody to take a year to read your novel or something. So a month is probably in the industry situation is long enough. I mean, if you're talking about you might get somebody that wants to have 3 months with it, and if you can accept that, then fair enough. But I think it can be done a bit quicker than that, and if somebody cannot do it in that length of time, then let them then try to find out. And if you're going to read a novel for somebody else, let them know how long it's going to take you. If it's going to take you 3 months, let I'm not I'm not I don't get I don't want to get into lecturing life lessons or anything, but it's just a thing that we kind of maybe forget, or writers and readers kind of forget. When you get somebody's manuscript, you just think, oh yeah, they know I'm going to be a long time at it, and actually they don't know that. When they send off a manuscript to you, they're really waiting for you to give them your response to it. They really want to know, and so it is a thing to kind of try to respect the deadlines that you both set. Some writers appreciate meeting their reader in person. Have lunch with them, discuss the work, and also provide a written report. That would be great to get that, a written report, a live meeting, and comments in the text. It's not always possible. It depends on the relationship you have with whoever is reading for you. Obviously, meeting in person is also something which happens in a workshop scenario, which is great too, because often it's a communal kind of response to the work, and it really does kind of just help with getting a picture of how the work has been received. As well as the Fielden website, there's also a website called TalentFill, which is another program for screenwriters, where writers write out reports on your script, and you do the same in return. And it's kind of they have their own currency, and it's another exciting way to keep kind of connected to other writers and discussing with other writers. Especially, there's a lot of beginners on it. The trouble with it is that you don't know who's going to be reading your script, whether they've read 10 years of scripts or whether they've just started reading scripts. You don't know, and though you probably will know by the response that you get. And the thing about the responses as well is that they're kind of ranked. So if you've been getting if you get a long review, you can rank it accordingly, and you'll know by the ranking system of mo a lot of reviewers whether they're fairly serious reviewers or whether they're just randomly doing it as something to pass the time. So we're looking for people who are fairly serious about reading scripts, if that's what you're looking for. Okay, so if we look at slide six now, as I said about Declan Mead and other experienced editors and publishers, when you're reading someone else's work, like if you are the reader, if you've given a manuscript or you've given a short story, I'd ask you to consider the idea. Ask the questions, has it been handled in the best way possible? Could the elements of the story have been exploited more effectively? You know, could it have been untangled better? Could it have been obscured better? Could have elements of the story been hidden better? Did it start at the right place? Was too much revealed at the beginning? Then look at the more micro questions of like just small proofing errors, indents, things like that. Just looking at it in the same way as you would review your own work. Review their work in that, looking through it. I mean, obviously you're not expected to proof it or anything like that at this point. It's more, and as I'll talk about in a few minutes, it's better to kind of just give a few pointers on punctuation. That I'll talk about that again in a few moments. If you are getting feedback then, you will be getting, you will probably get, you may well be getting conflicting responses. Some people say, yes, this works. Other people say the same thing doesn't work for them. And that's perfectly fine. But if three or four readers are all confused about one aspect of your tale, then perhaps that aspect does need further development. If everyone is saying the same thing about the same problem in the book or story, then you might need to consider looking at that area. Doing revisions after you've gotten the feedback, then once you've gotten the feedback, it's very difficult sometimes to implement it, because you've put all your energies into getting it down to this draft, and now you have to trawl through dialogue scenes. You have to write out dialogue where you thought your action was enough. It's very draining. Very draining to look at that story and say, I have to change this scene that I told into a scene that I show, and I show it through dialogue. I was just telling it. Now I have to do it through dialogue. It's very draining. But as they say, energy follows focus. Once you actually sit down and you start revising it, it soon gets a bit more easy. You soon start making a bit of progress, and often you'll be very glad, actually most of the time, that your reader picked up on this. You might even think it quite absurd that you did not see this yourself. It's just some things there on deadlines. It's very important when providing or receiving feedback to have deadlines. As I said earlier, a month should be sufficient for a novel. Some readers will ask for longer as they will want to think about the response. Sometimes that's worth the wait. Other times it is not. And I accept there are readers out there who need 3 months to give a response to a novel. But if you haven't the time, you might want to get some other readers on board as well. So you get a few readers, better readers, they're called in some places, some areas. If you give feedback, give clear specific responses. Like if something bothers you about a piece, let the writer know. Don't say, well, I mustn't be getting it, or I mustn't be smart enough for this, or maybe this is just, I should be getting this, but I don't know what it is, and I'm not going to say anything because I look, you know, silly. Do not do that. Tell the writer when something confuses you, no matter how ridiculous it seems. Like, I mean, if you just, like, if the guy he's going to the bank and he sees a cat and you say, well, you know, that's, I make up the reason for my own head why that's there, why he's looking at a cat. Maybe it is a mistake. Maybe it is something that needs to be drawn attention to. So don't kind of ignore things that kind of irk you about a project that you've been given. Report on it. It can be difficult to identify these things, but it is important to try and help any writer in any way you can, because you would like the same to be done with your work. Don't ignore something which jars, as I said, your reading of work. This is what the writer needs to know. You should read submissions with great care. Remember, it is not published material. It has not been through the professional filters of editors, story editors, typesetters. There will be often unusual presentation, and what we are asked to do as a first reader of a nearly draft is to assess the material. Has the material been handled the way I've said earlier, and then look at the presentation. Now, This might sound contradictory, but writers might ask you to ignore proofing errors. And I mean, that's not possible for many readers, and it's certainly not possible for many editors. So what I would suggest is, if you see a typo or a grammar error the first time, mark it. If the same error is repeated, just note that this first mark is symptomatic of these issues. You don't need to keep saying, I mean, you're using the comma in the wrong place, and you don't need to mark it every time. We don't really need to be given a draft back to a new writer after a number of drafts with a big load of red ink all over it. It's just not needed. It's not necessary. There's enough to be done. If you catch three or four errors in terms of typos and punctuation in the first paragraph or half page, if you're correcting work for somebody else, then don't really continue on marking it like that, because that's just going to be depressing for the writer. It's symptomatic. You can make a note on the bottom of the page saying this is symptomatic, and that. So that would be my suggestion there. This, of course, does train writers in a way, I suppose, how to teach writing, but I don't do it for free at your local writing group when you're looking for feedback. Now, moving on to slide 8. Now, when assessing work by a fellow writer, ask yourself, what is the level of presentation? And even though this might be contradictory, as I just said, remember it's not published material, it still doesn't mean you don't treat it as though it is an actual submission. Because the writer that gives you this manuscript is not going to be able to explain everything to the editor they have submitted to later, as the editor is reading it. The editor is going to be sitting alone in an office reading this submission, and nobody can explain it to them. The only thing they can explain is what's there in front of them. So give the writer the opportunity of a professional reading. Take on the work as though you were the magazine editor. What is the level of presentation? Is it clear? Are the indents consistent? Is punctuation at industry level? Are there commas, apostrophes, and full stops out of place? Are their spellings incorrect? What about tense usage, sentence structure? I mean, it's not necessary to go through with a fine-tooth comb if you're reading a draft for someone, but I would pick up on a few errors. And if there's a lot of errors, then, as I said, symptomatic. Symptomatic. It indicates that you do this error a lot, and it's an error you need to fix. I mean, usually if people learn that they've been using the comma the wrong way or something, or they've been doing its, which is a common one, it apostrophe s, in the wrong way, then they will know they'll never make that mistake again. But they might continue making it all through one manuscript, so there's little point marking it out every time, if you know what I mean there. Yeah, I would pick up on errors. It will help the writer. They will thank you for it someday. As I said, ask, has the writer effectively handled the material in, to describe it another way, a unified, insular way? Is this story of a piece, or is it quite unnecessarily disjointed? Has the writer lost control of the material? Did they lose the vision of the story? If my bank robber is spending too long in the coffee shop, or is my bank robber spending, is he going in for a coffee and a donut in the coffee shop next door before he goes into the bank rob it? Is he leisurely reading the paper or something? Or does he come out of the bank and forget where the getaway car is? I mean, these are obviously extreme examples. Issues there would be a lot more subtle, but this is the type of thing we are asked to weed out as conscientious readers. Also, can the intrinsic idea of the piece be identified? The famous critic Tvetan Todorov once defined a great art as the seamless joining of technique and ideas. You might not be able to untangle these in a great work of art, but you can still find the idea. The idea of Great Expectations, I suppose, is the maturing of Pip, who grows up poor, becomes wealthy, but it's not fulfilled. The idea of Harry Potter is Harry leaving home to train as a wizard and save the world. The idea of Death of a Salesman is the end of salesman Woody Lohan's career and the collapse of the god of materialism. Some works are obviously easier than others to do this with. very abstract works, the idea can perhaps be said to be ideas. The idea of ideas could be, in some cases. New writers normally are wise enough to learn the basics first and will, unlike myself, keep it a lot simpler. Try to identify the idea behind the work. That helps you to find out if the writer has handled it in the best possible way. When you are when you're writing a response, imagine yourself as a magazine editor. When you're considering a piece and you're thinking of what you think of it, you start. You're a magazine editor. Think of yourself that you started. Imagine that you had started your magazine 15 years ago. You've never made any money out of it. You've handled submissions, advertising, editing, other writers, other contributors such as photographers for 4 issues every year. You live for your magazine. It is your main, it's a huge interest. And then you get this piece into your inbox, which it fits perfectly into what your magazine is looking for, your submission guidelines, everything is there. But for some reason, you don't want to publish it. This is why not, we need to ask ourselves. Why wouldn't you immediately include it in your next issue? Now, that helps to define whether the story is effective or not. And sorry to say, but editors 99 times out of 100 are not sufficiently convinced to include a submission in their magazine. Might be a very, 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 very good story, but it's just not convincing enough. Having said that, if you follow this course and improve as per and work, develop your industry formatting and other course guidelines, I do believe that you will be in the top 10% of those submissions that an editor receives. So you're getting closer. And it's also, of course, to be notable that the case that editors want to find material they love. They're looking for material. They are open to submissions every time that they read a story or a poem. It's in your hands to convince them.
Right, now to slide 9, and I have just a few things to say about the structure of a response. So the traditional breakdown of higher level review of books, film and music is first to describe the work, analyze it and then review it. So let's go through these now. A description. It is great to have someone write out a few sentences describing what you've written. In screenplay industry, this is called coverage. This is where a reader simply notes what they've read as they take it in. It always surprises the writer at these lines, because it puts the story in a different light, always. So a description even of your story by somebody else is incredibly valuable. It does not mean that they get it right. Okay, so they'll miss out often from the description. Sometimes they'll miss out on very, very important aspects of your story. And that's where we need to learn as readers and editors that when writing a description of someone else's work, make sure that you do get it right. This ensures that you read the story thoroughly. There's nothing more embarrassing than reading somebody's crime story and completely missing the reveal of the killer at the end. So it is very important that you can describe the story in a few sentences, but you can get the main aspects of, especially if it's a short story. I mean, if it's a novel, then you're not going to be able to do every single twist and turn, but you need to get the broad main broad twists and turns in it in this kind of paragraph. Then you can comfortably move on to the next section of your response. That's the analysis. So this often depends on the type of story it is. Some are easier to analyze than others. For example, a response to Great Expectations might suggest paper represents the huge changes in 19th century England and how they affected one family, whereas Death of a Salesman perhaps distills the American dream and its failings, while Harry Potter exploits our love of fantasy, Victorian troops, and feeling isolated in a family unit. These are just suggested analyses of these stories.
You're invited, or you're identifying, sorry, you're identifying the themes of the story, which are common with other stories. This too is of benefit to the writer, as they get a better sense of how their work is coming across. They may already be well aware of the themes, of course, but it is useful for them to see how their reader is expressing this. Finally, you tell the writer what you think in as constructive a way as possible. I do like to begin with some positive point on a story. There is always something negative and positive about every work. What worked very well in the piece? Pacing, character, use of language, dialogue. What parts of the piece were most affecting? Then identify what did not work. What could have been developed more? Character, descriptive language. Did the sequence of events known here as the plot fail as being unconvincing? Also note any punctuation issues in a general way. I would also recommend a few in-text comments. In a short story, really no more than 5 or 6, you know, as I said, a writer only needs a few notes on technical revisions to help them. Writers are often aware of proofing mistakes, but they really should be encouraged to remove them before final submission. Telling a writer something is brilliant in the story, as I said, is very nice for them, but of virtually no use whatsoever. More time needs to be allocated to helping the writer improve their work. Of course, occasional praise is not a problem, but be sparing in case they send you another draft which is even better than the first. If you're in a workshop, try to tell the writer what you think before they get to explain everything. Otherwise, you know, your valuable ice-cold response to the work will be contaminated by their explanation. That's why the writer is usually asked to wear the cone of silence in workshops until after all the others have commented. It doesn't always work, of course, as writers are generally often desperate to explain the rationale of their piece, and that's unfortunately not helpful to them in any way, because writers cannot explain their story to anyone. All of the right explaining must go down onto the page. And I mean, you can argue against that by saying, well, I like to explain my work. I like to discuss my work with somebody else. And that is a kind of a pre kind of discussion where you wouldn't even be. I mean, you wouldn't really be at that stage. That would be an earlier stage. I would kind of suggest that the work has to be on the page, because you can't explain it to an editor. Now, if you're going to work with somebody as a kind of a mentor, then yeah, you might discuss the work. But if we're talking about final editing or final revisions, before we get to the actual point of submitting to a magazine, then we need to kind of get this kind of test where the reader is not kind of going to be explained to them why this works, that they actually are just going to read the work. Step 10 then emphasizes the need to represent positive and negative points and to discuss these with your author. It is also essential as a writer when getting feedback not to start arguing with your reader. You know, they've taken the time to read your work and they provide you with feedback they've written and thought about. They are helping you tremendously. Don't try to explain points to them. If they didn't understand something in your text, then you didn't explain it properly in the text. Everything hangs on the text. Yes, some readers do miss things, of course, but it is not really, there's absolutely no point trying to make them understand those items when you're getting feedback from them. The show is gone over at that stage. You politely thank your reader for taking the time to read your work and providing you feedback. Do not try to start correcting their view on your story. If you do, you won't be able to get them to read your work again. And if a reader is willing to provide negative criticism, that is very valuable to us as a writer. We need to know specifically why something is not working for our readers. It doesn't mean we will agree with it. It doesn't mean that we will do anything about it. We mightn't change it at all. A perfectly valid decision to make, but we do need to know about it. Okay, so now a quick writing exercise. I want you to think, as I've raised a number of contentious issues, perhaps in the last We're probably primed now to simply think of the worst argument you've ever had with anyone in your life. And please sit down, pick out your pen and paper, and write about that argument for the next 5 minutes. Okay, so stop the tape for 5 minutes and come back to me. Good luck. Okay, I hope that got some useful material out there and it wasn't too disturbing or distressing. So, on now to slide 12. Just to ask you what you thought of Sense and Sensibility. This novel was written early in the 19th century by Jane Austen. She was often seen as a somewhat more humorous writer than the Brontes, who wrote Jane Eyre and Wuthering Heights. The style is, of course, quite different to modern language. Just to identify the human themes in the chapter I sent you, if you like. See there on slide 12, we have some discussion on the theories of literature and morality. I'm not going to labour these points, but just to think of, I suppose, what they're talking about really is when we're writing characters, where is our moral kind of gauge with these characters? It's quite difficult to discuss in a way that's clear. But if you're, I mean, you give moral kind of judgment to your characters. I mean, if I write about a character who gets up in the morning and decides I'm going to rob a bank, then we are giving him a moral code that says it's okay to rob banks because I need the money, and it's not a problem that it's against the law. So I suppose that's what is meant. This is what we're getting into now, is the human condition. And yes, of course, when you're talking about all these other genres that we've done up to now, crime and sci-fi, you know, they do also engage somewhat with moral. Obviously, they do naturally. Moral is a big thing with crime. But now we're talking about moral kind of positions in human relationships when people are kind of in a conflict situation. So there can be more of a drama. Doesn't have to be any kind of big event in it. It can be just a small event. It can be domestic drama about a small situation, small conflict, and a story or book can be written about that. And what is the moral kind of positioning of the characters in it is something to just consider or reflect on. So I hope that is useful, and don't hesitate to email me with any comments or questions on it. And if you want the full article, I will send it on to you. So on slide 13 there, some outlines, some further information you might be asked about submitting a synopsis. A logline is a short sentence or two which outlines your novel if you're deciding to go ahead with a novel submission. You might be asked to indicate what genre it falls into, which you should be able to do by the end of this course now. And often you're also requested to include a word count. So that's just a few tips there on just a few primers, really, for what you'll be facing into if you are going to go ahead with a longer scale, a longer form project. So slide 14. Yeah, OK, thank you. It's the next week. It's the World of Shadows. We'll be moving to the horror genre, and we will be talking about getting at last to the stage of submitting and publishing your work. So don't forget this week to read your peers' work. And please also write a short piece of around 500 words based on a conflict of some kind between people. And you can also, if you prefer, you could write a response to somebody else's work if you'd rather spend the weekend doing that. Get it in at the usual deadline. Okay, thanks a lot for listening. I hope this was useful, and have a very good week's writing. Bye-bye.
Produced with Audacity and Martin Kiveny Creative Writing. Music track Thornport by Alexander Nakarada, SerpentSoundStudios.com. Please note this recording is for your personal use and should not be shared or published in any way. Martin Kiveny Creative Writing 2020.